This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We are in our Skyview Network satellite studios in Scottsdale. Hope you had a good weekend. There was no Cardinal game yesterday. There was really no Cardinal game on Thursday night, other than just a bunch of guys going down with injuries, and including Drew Stanton. We will talk about that today with Paula Bovin, now the Hall of Famer. It'll be good to catch up with Paula. I had a great weekend in this regard. I went to my son's house yesterday. He had Red Zone Channel on. I'm one of those guys that because the Cardinals every week I have to talk about them, I will watch. If I decide I want to see multiple games, I have a little establishment down the street that I can ride my bike or walk down to and enjoy myself, let my hair down with what's left of it. And so I've not done Red Zone before. Last 2 weeks, my son moved back from Seattle. Last 2 weeks I've been at his house on Sundays, and now I'm absolutely hooked. Totally hooked on Red Zone. Like, it's the greatest invention ever. And when people say that the ratings are down in the NFL and all that stuff, there's a reason for it, because I'm not going to sit there and watch one game shoved down my throat for three straight hours anymore. Red Zone is, I was able to see Cleveland just barf all over their shoes yesterday. Just one of the dumbest before halftime plays I have ever seen. Like, I would love to have a spot where a coach gets fired at halftime. It needs to happen in the NFL. Wouldn't it be great? You're fired at halftime. Just get out of here. We're going to finish the second half. Head coach so-and-so was removed by ownership at halftime. Hugh Jackson would have been that yesterday for the Cleveland Browns. A quarterback sneak with DeShone Kizer on the 5-yard line with no timeouts and 15 seconds left. And this is why they're such a bad franchise. And then there's Marquise Lee in Jacksonville. Celebration penalty. There's just dumb things every Sunday. And when you're able to watch every game and bounce around, like, I don't know what those poor people in New York City yesterday having to sit through the Giants and 49ers for 3.5 straight hours. There's another coach, Ben McAdoo. You're not getting on the flight here in San Francisco. You're done. You're fired. I don't know if they fired him yet today, Eric. Have we seen Ben McAdoo fired?
No,
his team?
No,
that's got to happen.
He has not been fired, but I mean, the whole culture with the Giants is a problem. I really think it goes a lot deeper than who the head coach is and things like
Eli,
that.
Eli, you think Eli is part of the deal?
No, I mean, you've got Odell Beckham and all of his antics, and it just seems like a disconnected roster.
Yeah.
And you could have the best coach in the world, but if you have a disconnected roster, you're not going to have a lot of success.
Yeah, I mean, so the NFL yesterday was entertaining.
To think back to the 80s, Brad, or the, you know, mid to late 80s, and you had a Sunday afternoon Giants at 49ers game, and you were like, wow.
Mark Bavaro, Phil Sims.
This is gather around our non-HD TV and watch this. And
Lawrence
then
Taylor.
Yesterday you had, what, 0-9 against 1-8?
God, it was just,
I think,
putrid football. Just... And so, you know, Red Zone was going back to the Rams game over and over and over because they were scoring again and again and again. And you see where the Cardinals are and where the Rams, like, watching Seattle and the Cardinals last Thursday night. Now, granted, it was Thursday night football. And anybody who tries to defend Thursday night football, you don't care about players. You don't. When I saw the narrative, well, the players agreed to this for an extra $250 million. I'm sure if you took a checklist from every single player, no, we didn't agree to it. The players' union may have. I mean, it's the quality of the game on Thursday night and the amount of injuries that we saw on Thursday night. You cannot tell me that there's not a correlation between the two. And rather than sit there and bow down all day long, oh, it's the greatest stuff ever. No, the quality of that game Thursday night, I actually, because Jordan went to the game. Jordan went to the game for us, and I decided I'm going to stream it and see what the quality of streaming is like. I actually sat on my back patio, had a very nice cigar. I had a very nice notebook where I was sitting there making notes, and I was enjoying the evening, and I was watching the game, and it was a great experience. It was about 30 seconds behind. I did walk in and turn on the traditional thing just for a second to see, okay, how far apart is it? It's like 30 seconds behind. But I see now why the streaming numbers continue to grow and increase. Why would people go to a game? Why would you go? Versus having all the comforts of home and being able to watch it, take notes, do your thing, write about it. What are they going to say afterwards? Yeah, we tried hard. Yeah, I got it. Everything is canned. So it was the college stuff on Saturday was even better. College football on Saturday was so good. I don't know if the Auburn upset of Georgia, and it wasn't just an upset, it was a demolition. To see Miami absolutely crush, I want a turnover chain now. I want one of those Miami turnover chains. We should have that here, like Eric, you bag a guest, or I bag a guest. We wear a turnover chain here and put another link in the chain as a celebration for doing what we do.
A guest chain?
A guest chain. Something.
Or a great story told
chain? Great story told chain. Something where every day, you know, we can make it out of paperclips. Like Ed Reed was making chain up on the sideline. It was funny.
Land a big sponsor chain?
Land a big sponsor chain. Who would have thought? You know, let's just go all the way down with all those. Why not? The college football was so good. And here's where it's going with college, okay? Auburn still has to play Alabama. If Auburn beats Alabama and then they go to the SEC title game and they win the SEC title game and they have two losses, you can't tell me that they can't and shouldn't be part of the four. Doesn't matter they have two losses. Doesn't matter. So all the way down, that was it was really good stuff up until Saturday night about 7:30, and then the Arizona State game kicked off. By the way, just so we are clear with each other, just so we're really clear about where Arizona State and Arizona are on the radar maps, this, about 45 minutes ago, I get the text or the email sent over from Arizona State, ASU, U of A, Pac-12 Network. 2:30 in the afternoon. Pac-12 Network. You think Alabama Auburn would ever be? You think UCLA USC would be Pac-12 Network distribution of, I don't know, family and friends? It's really sad because U of A has a Heisman Trophy candidate and Khalil Tate. He's not going to win. Not saying he's going to win, but he is a candidate. Doesn't matter if it's Oregon State. Every week he runs for over 200 yards. Every week he does something special with the football. He is must see. Anybody who says Sam Darnold is quarterback of the year in the conference, you're joking. You are just buying into hype. Khalil Tate is the best quarterback in the Pac-12 conference this year. He just is. Take the numbers, chew them up any way you want. Spit them out any way you want. If there's anybody that's not voting for Bryce Love or Khalil Tate out west, I get it when you see Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield was tough as nails. And I don't want to pick on you, Eric, but, I mean, he just completely rolled right through TCU. There was not even a – I don't know. How did you handle Saturday afternoon? Were you expecting TCU to get crushed?
Not crushed.
Destroyed? Annihilated?
Not crushed.
They weren't?
They were. I just wasn't expecting them to
get crushed. You weren't expecting it to win?
I mean, and to think that their defense actually showed up and played well in the second half and held Oklahoma to 0 points, because at halftime I was thinking, wow, Oklahoma could easily score in the 50s, maybe the 60s.
Yeesh.
They had 38 at halftime. They finished with 38. Too bad they didn't play that kind of defense from the time the game started.
Was it not playing that kind of defense, or was it Oklahoma just taking their foot off the pedal?
Probably a little bit of both.
Yeah. Well, so the ASU-UCLA game, you didn't see it because it's Pac-12
Network.
Not. Yeah.
I did not.
And you saw a little bit of the U of A game. I had both going on Saturday night. I'm sitting in my office, and there was a couple of moments where it was, wow, it's Saturday night, and I'm watching two games at the same time by two teams that, you know, in U of A's case, they are interesting. They're 61 players are freshmen or redshirt freshmen that have that are on that roster. That, I mean, they're getting it done in building numbers up. And they did what they're supposed to against Oregon State. They chewed them up, spit them out. Arizona State, this is what you get. You're 500 again. I don't think Todd's going to lose his job, though. I don't, and I'll get into that as the show progresses today and over the next week or so. I think the only way that he loses his job, and this is me talking to people whose opinions I respect within Arizona State. This is not media stuff all the way around. I think the only way he loses his job is if they completely zero out against Arizona. Even if they lost at Oregon State, then they shouldn't. There's no reason to. If it's me, I would pull the plug on him. But it's not my money, and that is part of the deal. There's another part to it that I will get to as to why I believe that Todd is going to make it as we sit here right now, even after just a brutal loss. That was a brutal loss, another way to put it. On the other side, Lonzo Ball's in town tonight, and the J.D. Martinez stories continue to roll along. There's a lot to get to on both fronts. Paula's in about 10, 12 minutes. She was on the red carpet runway being honored recently, so we'll get into her going to the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame, and much, much more. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Welcome back on a Monday, and we'll have Paula here in about 10 minutes. News and notes with Paula Bovin, AZ Central in the past, now the professor and a Hall of Famer. In the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. Paula will be with us in about 10 minutes. This part of the show, this segment of the show brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most, guys. You got to get life insurance. You need to do it. Sagicor Now, that's the place to go. And you put that off. You don't want to put it off. Taking care of your family, it's time to start thinking about your future. If you're in a space where you're looking around at your portfolio and you're saying this doesn't make sense, Sagicor, that's the place to be. Sagicor Now. And get your life insurance. Protect what matters most. Sagicor, we appreciate their support. I'm going to get over to the Suns here first before I get to J.D. Martinez and some football, too. I'll circle back on the football end of things. Earl Watson did a podcast on ESPN over the weekend, and he talked about how he was fired. When you cover coaches, coaches are hired to be fired. That goes without saying. But I think it's important to know how it goes down. It says a lot about the situation that they are in. I'm going to paraphrase what Earl Watson said on the podcast, but in essence, Robert Sarver did all of the talking. It was a 35 to 40 minute conversation. Sarver had said to him when he was initially hired, you're not going to be the long-term guy here. And so he moved on. And of course, there's been all the trying to break down what happened, why it didn't work with Earl Watson. And so people are trashing him, and he's trying to protect his reputation. So it's not pretty. Robert Sarver is sitting with somebody. I was not there, but sitting with somebody for 35 to 40 minutes, to me, actually seems pretty reasonable for a sports owner. A lot of sports owners would just say, you're done. That's it. See you later. Thanks for playing. Here's HR. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. I don't know exactly what was said in there. Earl Watson did not go into great detail about it. But the fact he's talking about it a little bit, he wants to protect his reputation and make sure that he has the next gig. I am sure that anybody who looks at what is going on here in Phoenix when it comes to their head coaching situation will say, oh, you're in Phoenix. You don't need to explain it to us. We got it. We understand. They are dysfunctional. It's the only way to put it. So that leads us to tonight. So Lonzo Ball's in town tonight. The Lakers play the Suns. I'm sure most of you, because the Suns are so far removed from the radar screen, unless you are going to tonight's game, you probably didn't even realize that the Suns were going to take on the Lakers tonight. In fact, it's a big Suns week. I'm bringing this up because in most other NBA cities, and by the way, the NBA ratings are way, way up to start the year. They are way up. And there's a lot of traction around the NBA. They started the season earlier. I think it's very interesting, just on a programming side of things, that there's a number of NBA games tonight opposite Monday Night Football. Monday Night Football is no longer impenetrable. You can put other things up against it. So Lonzo Ball and the Lakers are in downtown Phoenix tonight. What does it mean for the Suns? I think there's moments. I watched some of their game against Minnesota the other night for a few minutes. They look fine. It's a work in progress. It's always a work in progress. That's the problem. I don't ever sit there and feel like, wow, they're better than this team or that team. And the Lakers are so young, but it will be fun to watch Lonzo tonight. Then you have James Harden here on Thursday night. And then they play the Lakers again on Friday night. So there's three games for the Suns this week that, look, if you're looking to see how they're progressing and how they are growing, I'd say you give them a little bit of a sample this week. Just a little bit of a sample. Because there's intrigue on all those games. And the fact that Harden rolls in here and Mike D'Antoni rolls in here and it takes you back to when the Suns were really relevant, that's interesting. J.D. Martinez, so over the weekend, again, there were a couple of articles actually over the weekend where Scott Boros, the agent for J.D. Martinez, continues to try to drum up the price tag. Conversely, Derek Hall was quoted over the weekend as saying, you know, our payroll's really not going to change all that much, which I thought was an interesting quote. It didn't sound like the Diamondbacks are waving the white flag, but it also sounds like they're not going to give in to what Scott Boros is going to do. 5 years at $200 million for J.D. Martinez, $40 million a year. More than Zach Greinke. Is 5 years at $150 million seeming to be reasonable, seeming to be the number that they should settle in on? As this is being played out, are you, as a Diamondback fan, as a baseball fan, even as a sports fan, whenever dollar figures get brought up, it turns into greedy ball player. But guess what? The greedy ball player always seems to get his number somewhere, and then all of a sudden everybody's a fan. If you were to just put the dollar figure and just do this for a moment and put yourself in the front office of the Diamondbacks, and let's just say they get J.D. Martinez at $30 million a year, then what is the number that Paul Goldschmidt is going to be worth? Let's say it's a five-year, $150 million contract. I believe the Diamondbacks, like any team, can afford it. I'm going to spend their money because they have a huge television deal and there always seems to be a way. They found a way to pay $30 million plus to Zach Greinke. I think they could do the same with J.D. Martinez. If they're able to get J.D. Martinez done to stay here in Arizona, and to this point, Scott Boros hasn't said anything publicly that Arizona's out and the Diamondbacks haven't said we're out and we're going a different direction. Derek's quote about we're not going to change our payroll very much could be taken a number of ways. Could it be they take J.D. Martinez back and they trade Zach Greinke here at the winter meetings in the next couple of weeks, immediately taking that payroll number and shifting it a different direction? I think the answer on that is yes. Do they find a way to get Yasmani Tomas out of here at $75 million? I think the number on that is yes. They're not going to trade him straight up. We're not going to trade a bag of rocks. They're probably going to have to pay some of that payroll. And they may have to include some younger players that you would hate to see leave. I don't know what the future is going to hold financially for a guy like A.J. Pollock, for instance. But I believe the Diamondbacks have to be looking at his number and say, okay, are we going to be able to afford him? You can't just play baseball like the Dodgers and go rent players and bring in big number players and not expect there to be, at some point in time, a reduction in those numbers. Give an example in L.A. They've already said Andre Ethier is not coming back, and I'd be surprised if Adrian Gonzalez comes back. Well, guess what? All of a sudden, their payroll goes, two big numbers get cut off. The Diamondbacks aren't in that space. They've got to move some payroll. I cannot imagine we're going to open next season. Cannot imagine with $80 million or thereabouts tied up between J.D. Martinez, Zach Greinke, and Paul Goldschmidt. And I'm of the opinion they should trade Greinke. I'm just flat of that opinion. Trading Greinke, Robbie Ray has established himself, in my opinion, as a high number one starter. He can be that good. Top of the rotation guy. Every fifth day, I feel comfortable. I feel confident that Robbie Ray can deliver. And that's the business side of this game. Trading Zach Greinke and getting back three prospects, trading Zach Greinke and getting back a number two or a number three, trading Zach Greinke and fixing the hole, if you're comfortable having six second basemen and shortstops on this roster, and there's three on each side. Yeah, they were able to play that out, but is it really good? Is it really good for business? If you feel as though Archie Bradley should go into the starting rotation, which I don't, I think Archie should become the closer, but that's just me. The point is now that this is being played out so publicly, where Boros has said one thing, and now you have the Diamondbacks responding back. So lines are being drawn in the sand. We're not going to change payroll drastically here in Arizona. Okay. So one of two things, either they've decided we're going to move on from JD, this is our number, or they've told JD, go out and get your best number and then bring it back to us. And I think that's probably the smarter play. That said, you have to trust that Boros is negotiating in good faith with Arizona. I haven't heard from JD Martinez as of yet. Eric, when you add all these things up, because you're a fan of the team, my stance is trade Greinke, find a way to get Martinez back here.
I would agree with that. I just wonder if we just saw the greatness of J.D. Martinez at the perfect time when, you know, you see guys that have great seasons, half seasons, quarter seasons. They make a ton of money, and then they go back to being a really good player, not an elite player. And when you're talking about that kind of money, that's just a gigantic investment for I guess the Diamondbacks aren't a small market, but a mid-market franchise that struggles to get people to watch their games in person.
Yes. Well, and part of that is the stadium issue.
Of course. Their TV numbers are very good, but
those TV numbers.
Of course, we do. But those people that are watching the games on TV aren't spending money inside the stadium, and that's what helps build revenue, and that's what helps sign elite players.
So the payroll last year was between 105, was just around 105 million. Next year's payroll is supposed to be north of 115 by a little bit.
So a little bit of an increase.
So what you're looking at here is 33 in Greinke. Okay, so now subtract that from the 115.
Yep.
And that leaves you at around 72 million.
Right.
To fill out the rest of your roster. 15 of that's tied up in Tomas. I believe that's his number.
Okay.
Got to get rid of that one. That 15, that drops you down to 62.
Yep.
Goldschmidt, that drops you down to about 60. So you have to fill out the rest of your roster at $60 million. A.J. Pollock's number is going to start to come into play at some point. And I think if you're going to go put the 30-plus tag on J.D., I don't see where you can't not cut some other people out of here. There's mm-hmm. There's got to be a tough trade or two if Martinez is going to be back here.
I would think so. And it's hard because you're competing against a team that doesn't care about spending money. You're competing against the National League West champions that also happen to play in your same division. So.
Yep. And I think the Giants are going to be one of those teams that's going to pursue J.D. Martinez.
Probably.
So you're going to look at that. And
the Giants are down, but the Giants don't always stay down.
No, the Giants are smart. Look, if he goes over to the American League, you had somebody who said, look, Ron Gardenhire went back to Detroit. Could you see J.D. going back to Detroit? Yeah, I could see J.D. going back to Detroit. Could I see J.D. going to Boston? Yeah, I could see J.D. going to Boston. And so there's just going to come a point where I don't want to see fan backlash on the organization on this one. And they're already starting to do we're going to stick to our guns and we're going to try to play it out. Paula is next. Paula Bovin, the professor, now a Hall of Famer. That is on the other side, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. And now the Hall of Famer every week. We should get, Jared, we should get like a new open for Paula. Just something like big, booming, skyrockets in flight type thing. You know, big celebration like Cool in the Gang or something. Because the professor is now a Hall of Famer. Like we're stacking these big, fancy titles around Paula Bovin. And she hates all of it. And she just would rather come on here and talk sports and get out of the way, right?
No, Brad. I like all this attention. Are you
like
kidding me?
Are you charging now? Is your stuff up on eBay? I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the shirt I wore, the one I bought from JCPenney, that's up there.
Listen to you. For those that aren't aware, Paula did go into the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame, and it was almost 2 weeks ago. It was it looked like a terrific event, and you looked stunning. A, B, your family looked awesome, and C, you. I heard my spy said you got teared up when Earl Hershiser's little video came on.
I did. I was very proud that I got through my speech without tearing up, and then they did that, and that was pretty amazing. It was like my career kind of coming full circle at that moment, and it was very cool.
This is not an obituary, by the way. Let's not.
Yeah, I know exactly.
We're not throwing dirt on her.
Thank you.
But I heard you did this in your speech that was really from the heart about how journalism still matters.
Right. I think I even said in my speech, it's not a political thing. It's just a journalism thing, because all the sort of talk about fake news when there's all this wonderful journalism and much of it in sports and much of it related to the people that they were celebrating that night. So I just thought it was worth a mention. And so, yeah, it was, I guess, well received, which is nice.
No, I've heard and had several notes of people that listen to you when we're together doing our thing. So I'm curious about, we just had a picture of you up there with the five of you going in. Did Dan Marley ask to have his picture taken with you? Did Shane Doan ask to have his picture taken with you?
Actually, at the end of the evening, Shane did come up and we had asked if we could have our picture together, which was very cool and, you know, not something I usually do with. But as we know, Shane is among the nicest human beings on the planet, certainly in the professional athlete realm. Yeah. No, Marley gave me a little crap during his speech, but that was okay.
Really?
That's part of the, yeah, in a fun way, because I had mentioned I had to get, you know, I had to finish my speech soon because Marley said his was going to be really long. But then he went up there and said, oh, once again, Paula misquoting me.
Oh,
I didn't say that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I know. But wow. it was very funny. Yeah. Their speeches were great.
Do you have a plaque or a bust or something, you know, like the Pro Football Hall of Fame? How do they do this?
Yeah, no, they give you this gorgeous sort of glass thing that it felt like it weighed about 40 pounds with the induction, you know, mentioned on there. And, you know, it's lovely and amazing, and I'm not sure where to put it yet because I don't have anything.
Put in your
like
office.
A good display place, you know.
Yeah, Paula's got this palatial office at Arizona State. I've been
Oh,
in.
Yeah.
It's got this view, this panoramic view, and it's very nice.
So, my no window office is that what you're making
right.
fun of?
That's yeah. Right. Me? Far be it from me to make fun of something.
Yeah, come on, Brad.
All right, so where do you want to start here? I want to go over, I think Todd Graham's going to make it, even after losing to UCLA. I think, and I'll tell you why. I've had some people there that have said to me, that, and these are not, you know, PR people. These are people that are in the biz side of it, that Michael Crow is very enamored with the whole graduation rate thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe this is a program that becomes like Northwestern. You're not going to win, and fans don't want to hear this stuff, but Michael is more enamored with the graduation totals than necessarily the other stuff. He was very concerned about his coach dropping F-bombs all over the place on television until earlier this year when it was communicated to said coach to please knock that off, in particular the Texas Tech game. And so I think he's going to make it unless he just completely folds here the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We were just, someone on here at Cronkite was just going to put up a poll about, you know, what does basically Todd have to do to keep his job. I completely agree. I think, you know, and I know, Crow, the graduation thing is important. I don't know if I'd say it was number one, but it's certainly up there. But I think they've gotten some recruiting momentum too, Brad, which I think has helped them. The stuff with the stadium is moving forward. I think they're excited about that. So I do. I think they would really have to tank these two games. And I know I can't see that happening. So I think they're feeling better about Todd Graham than they were at the start of the season. I think they seem like they have the right coordinators in place. For the most part, they're playing hard. They've had some games where it's like, what just happened? But far more consistent than I think people thought they would be. So I know there are a lot of fans that don't like that,
yeah.
But I think that there are, continuity in college football is underrated, and I know that's hard to maintain because there's so much at stake and the salaries are so big, but I think there's value, and when you've got some momentum, you kind of try to keep it going. So,
well, here's the thing. There's probably people watching right now that are saying, you've got to be bleeping kidding me. Paula and Brad are saying Todd's going to be back after the embarrassing showing against UCLA, and my response is, maybe we are seeing a, and I not shouldn't say maybe, we're seeing a shift now in this whole college athletics narrative. And there are certain universities that are trying to do, for whatever reasons, student athlete. Most are not. Okay, most just don't care. But places like Vanderbilt are going to get their heads kicked in every year. Places like Iowa State are going to have that occasional great season like they're having right now. Northwestern is known for its academics, not its football program in the hub of Chicago. And maybe that's just what Arizona State is. Maybe that's just what they want. This is 6-7 wins, and we're excited to go to El Paso, and we're excited to go to Las Vegas. And as long as we beat the U of A, then, you know, football is just kind of sort of something to do. Maybe that's where we are now.
Well, I think you're right about the landscape shifting. I mean, I think a couple things have happened. We've seen, I think, some rule changes, academic standards that sort of leveled the playing field a little bit. I just think there aren't that many Alabamas. And, you know, we even saw SC for a little bit. You know, they had their struggles. They're always going to get great recruits and be among the top. But there's very few Alabamas in this country anymore that can kind of consistently be a powerhouse. You know, I don't know how many people have been talking about Georgia the last few years as sort of being a powerhouse. And look at Arizona. I mean, Brad, they were, if I remember correctly, at Pac-12 Football Media Day, they received the fewest votes of any team in the league.
Right.
I mean, really low. And here they are, I think, one of the great stories of the college football season, although the attendance doesn't suggest that, which is weird to me. But, I think it's just hard to be a dominant program in college football. And I know you're right. Fans hate to hear that. But I don't know how much better it can get at Arizona State.
Okay, so Stanford, it would prove us both wrong, right?
Right, well, of course. There's exceptions.
But does Michael Crow care more about being referred to as the Harvard of the West Coast or Stanford on the West Coast and competing for student athletes, and more importantly, donor dollars, like losing a football game to UCLA on Pac-12 Network that nobody sees and they still get a check? At the end of the day, does it really impact the program? To me, it's embarrassing that the U of A-ASU game has been selected by Pac-12 Network at 2:30 in the afternoon. There's not a chance in heck, Paula, that games of national importance would ever go that route. But that's where we are here. So football's just not that big of a deal. Maybe it's just changed.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a big deal in certain places, no question.
Certain places.
I think you're right about sort of Michael Crow and his vision and what's important for this university. And, you know, it's not such a bad thing to want to value student athletes, right, and get high GPAs and things like that. Is it hard to balance that and be a great football program? Well, Stanford does it, but I don't know how many other ones do. But I think at the end of the day, if you're running a clean program, and I think we can say that about Graham's tenure here, right? I mean, there have been some problems, but not like we've seen in the past. They're getting facilities built. He's doing the thing he's supposed to do with boosters. The GPA looks good. At the end of the day, maybe just enough for Arizona State right now.
Okay. Flip it around. They lose at Oregon State. Does he have to beat U of A? Flip it around. You and I can have this conversation all day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I think if you're ending with really bad momentum, and that would be Oregon State and Arizona, and if the losses are ugly, I think they're going to think long and hard about the future, because that suggests that there's not that momentum that I was just talking about.
Right. So
that would be concerning.
As you and I sit here today, that's what I believe, even after a dreadful showing against UCLA.
I agree. Sorry to agree with you so much today.
Yeah,
I mean,
what's the problem?
More,
what do you want to fight about? You think the Cardinals are good? Do you want Blaine Gabbert?
No, I can't go there. Sorry.
You agree with Derek Hall saying we're not going to blow the budget for Jay? No, he didn't say that. He said we're going to keep our budget within line of where it is, around $115 million for next year. And Scott Boras is already touting around $30 million a year for J.D. Martinez. I mean, where do you come down on that one? Do you walk?
Well, I think it would be so great for fans if Martinez could stay here. But that's an awfully steep price. And when you're juggling a lot of other big salaries, you have to be realistic. There's a way to keep him. My God, that'd be great. I just don't see it within the realm of what they're trying to do there.
Trade Greinke.
I don't know.
It's $33 million
a good pitcher
off.
Is No, I wouldn't trade Greinke.
Robbie Ray then becomes your number one starter. Greinke didn't do much in the postseason.
But I feel like there's so much value to him, even if he didn't give exactly what you need. It's just so hard to find a pitcher when you go into a game and think, okay, this has a good chance of turning out well for the Diamondbacks. There's great value in a great pitcher, and I wouldn't trade him.
Okay, if you sign Martinez,
mm-hmm.
Paul Goldschmidt can't be here.
I know.
Right?
I just think Martinez
is not going to
be here.
We agree on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And the worst thing this organization can do is the negotiations for Martinez, let's just say they throw out their $28 million a year. You know that Goldschmidt camp's going to know what the numbers were.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to use that against him. And it's, you know, Paul's going to be $35, $40 million a year. This is where it's heading. So they've kind of put themselves up against it. So.
Yeah, it's a somewhat impossible situation to get everything they would like to get. I think this team would be in such great shape if they added Martinez, but I just don't think they're going to be able to crunch the numbers and do it.
Okay, before you get out of here, what are you working on today? I am teaching this afternoon. I'm seeing if you and I are on the same. I heard you did a mock press conference the other day. The students were talking about it. What are you pushing today? Anything?
No, the big topic in our, so we have like a morning news meeting, and with what we were talking about today was Todd Graham and job security and what people value. The other conversation we were having was not about sports, but about, you know, all these women coming forward, you know, every environment, and everyone now having to sort of reexamine what is the definition of you know, harassment, sexual harassment, and, you know, are you allowed to be in an office with a woman anymore? You know, those kind of things that people have to talk about. So that's where we were going.
I was doing a story during the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
and one of the wives of the players, I said, I'll meet you over here at a live shot, or I'll come pick you up. And she flat said to me, I'm not going in a car with any other man without my husband.
Wow.
Don't take it personal. Don't take it personal. That's what she said.
Yeah.
And so if I said to you, boy, you look stunning and radiant at the Hall of Fame stuff, I said that to you in person, would that be construed as harassment versus a compliment?
No, because there is a history that we have.
But
that
if it's the first time I saw you,
I know what you're about. I could comfortably slap you and not feel badly about it. So, you know, a lot of it is perspective.
Wow. Forget about it.
Sorry, I don't know why I went there, Brad.
I wasn't expecting a shoe across the head. That's a really interesting dialogue to have, because you're right. It is out there. And there's also is there a statute of limitations, Paula? If somebody gives you a compliment in a way that you felt was inappropriate 15 years ago, and then it's brought up again, was that just a moment? I don't know.
The problem is, I don't have a problem with people bringing it up later, because people are younger, you know, there is always the concern. A lot of these things are happening or being done by people of power and wielding that power inappropriately. And so maybe some people are getting confidence later on that they did not have at that time.
I got you. I mean, I saw what the publisher of the newspaper even came forward on this last week. So
terrific.
I'll see you later today.
Okay. Sounds
good. Stay well. There's Paula Bova, News and Notes. Always good to catch up with the professor, now the Hall of Famer, Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. I'm going to go back on the Cardinals and some injuries that happened and kind of the lay of the land as you look at the NFC on the other side. A few other things before we get out of here. Our television show on Fox Sports Arizona airs 16 times per week. Tomorrow night will be our first airings. I think we're on before and after the Coyotes-Winnipeg game. That's tomorrow night. Stay with us. All right, a few things before we get out of here. So back on the Cardinals game, and we have some pictures here of Drew Stanton that are, he's getting crushed. He's getting just devastated. Oh, gosh. I laugh because we sit here all year long and hear about training camps and draft picks and how great everything's going to be, and these are the players, and I mean, the Cardinals, Drew Stanton just got thrown around like a rag doll again. And the sad part is DJ Humphries did get hurt. I'm watching the Cowboys game yesterday, and they go through their starting lineup, and Jonathan Cooper is introduced as a starting guard for the Dallas Cowboys. It's a first-round pick that completely blew up here. And, yes, it led to Chandler Jones. I get it. But it still was a player that didn't work out. I mean, you just see that. It's just awful what happened there to DJ Humphries. I'm not making light of the injuries that have impacted this team, but their season is over. And because it's the NFL, though, it just takes beating some bad teams. Beating Houston next week on the road is going to give people hope. Well, if they just win this, and you just look at them and say, this is not a playoff team, right? So Philadelphia is the best team in the NFC. The Rams are closing in on them. I would love to see a Rams-Philadelphia playoff game. That's really interesting to me. The Vikings are at 7-2. The Vikings play the Rams this week. That's going to be a great game to watch. There are some good matchups. For the Saints to be at 7-2 after they traded Brandon Cooks and their running game's doing it and they're getting some defense in New Orleans, who thought? Carolina and Seattle are both sitting there at 6-3. I don't know if Carolina is a great team or not. They have a very good player on the field in Cam Newton. But the Cardinals, you know, they don't have their starting running back. They don't have their starting quarterback. In fact, they may be their third quarterback. And they don't have their offensive line together. And they have this great wide receiver who's leading the league in catches. And they've got a defensive lineman, or a linebacker, I should say, in Chandler Jones, who's playing great. And they have a corner in Patrick Peterson who's terrific. But they have a kicker who can't save his life. You know, their return game, it's always feeling like it's the same old deal when it's Kerwin Williams back there. Justin Bethel couldn't play corner, even though they've wanted him to play corner. So we went through that for a year and a half before they said, you know what, you're just a very good special teams player. Tyrann Mathieu's not the player he once was, and he has a big contract coming up in March, a big number that they've got to decide if they want him or not. So you can go up and down this roster all day long. When Calais Campbell comes here next week, when Jacksonville plays here against the Cardinals, you cannot tell me Calais doesn't want to go get 10 sacks. And he's been killing everybody. That deal looks horrible. I'm going to go to Jacksonville because I have a better chance of winning and putting up big numbers. And guess what? He is. Yeah, there's some little things to grab onto that make it feel like, you know, this situation's not so bad. But top to bottom, you're going to sit here and wonder, is David Johnson going to be at 100% next year? Who is it going to be at quarterback? If Carson says he wants to stay here another year, even though I disagree with Peter on this, I think having Carson mentor somebody for a year just prolongs the agony. Look at Carson Wentz and look at Jared Goff. You bite the bullet, you get your head kicked in for a year or two, and then you come back and you've got 10 great years. Please, guys, don't keep jerking around with quarterbacks that are already in the league. Go draft that next great one. Yeah, it worked out with Carson. Yeah, it worked out with Kurt Warner. But we went through a long stretch here where it was not good football. I didn't need to see Derek Anderson and Max Hall, and down the list we went. Jared Nielsen has a birthday tomorrow. Man, he's getting old. But he showed up because he's the Iron Man. He's here today. Eric Sorensen, which is, of course, the Senior Executive Vice President of Everything or Nothing, depending on the day. We had a couple of interns that rolled through as well. We appreciate their support. It's always good to have Justin and Austin in today. I'm Brad Sussmat. Enjoy your Monday. Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.